You're listening to TalkZone.com. Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Welcome to Talk Zone Radio. That was I Can Start a Fire by Alex Call and Lisa Carey by their CD, Passion and Purpose, if you'd like a copy of that. And other songs, both about health care and just to make someone reflect and many times feel better. You can go to www.studergroup.com or you can go to Facebook and go, I'm sure, to Passion and Purpose. And you can see some videotapes of Alex Call and Lisa Carey performing live. And one of the wonderful songs that Lisa and Alex has put out is called Time to Live. It's about Lisa's battle with breast cancer, and it's really a marvelous song about taking each day as they come and doing the very best with it. Well, I'm Quinn Studer, and we're excited to have Lynn Kettleson on our show today. You know, a goal of our program is to bring to healthcare individuals, people that work in the healthcare field, the most up-to-date best practices so you can and they can put them into the performance in their own organization to improve their operations, whether it be to make patient care better, more efficiency, more effectiveness, make physician satisfaction better, employee satisfaction, and all sorts of good outcomes that comes from that. Lynn, welcome to Talk Zone Radio.
Well, thank you, Quinn. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, where do we find you today? Are you in Iowa?
I am. I'm up in the Quad Cities.
Well, good. Well, it's nice to have you here. For our listeners, I want to tell you a little bit what I know about Lynn and ask her then to introduce herself. Lynn is one of our longtime Studer Group coaches. She's been coaching with us almost from the beginning of the company. Prior to that, she was she still is a registered nurse, and she'll tell you a little bit about her background. She's pretty much, for Studer Group, almost done everything you could do as a coach, and she's also been very, very involved in looking at clinical outcomes, particularly with patient engagement as it relates to all patient engagement, but certainly focusing sometimes on frequency of rounding and what that can do for a patient's clinical outcomes. She was very involved in our study that was done on rounding, and she'll talk a little bit about that. So, Lynn, tell us a little bit about your career prior to joining Studer Group.
Well, sure, I'd be happy to, Quint. Prior to joining the Studer Group, I worked for a regional-based health system here in the Quad Cities, Davenport, Iowa, called Genesis Health System. I grew up as a nurse in that system and started my career there as a charge nurse and then a nurse manager. And my clinical background is pediatrics and neonatal intensive care. Along the road, though, in my 25-plus years of nursing, you take on multiple roles, and one of those, my last position in that organization, was to coordinate the activities of patient satisfaction and customer service for that system. So I really functioned like an internal consultant, helping them to improve the experience for the patients in our area. And we did a lot of the same tactics the Studer Group did and were pretty successful in moving our patient satisfaction results from the 33rd to the 85th percentile in about 18 months. But that's when I knew we also had maxed out our internal capabilities and were looking for something that would take us to the next level. That's when I saw you, Quint, speaking at a conference, really liked what you had to say, benchmarked what you were doing at that time down at Baptist, and decided that we were interested in implementing the framework in a more formal way. And that's when we really were able to take our organization up over that 90th percentile, and thus the relationship that I built with the Studer Group and eventually joined full-time about 8 years ago.
Yep, and right now for those listening, Lynn actually oversees all of our coaching. So she oversees almost, you know, our quality council, which is like a peer review council that looks at our performance in all organizations and always looking at our research and our data. It was pretty exciting, Lynn, to see the other day with our HCAHPS data that organizations that we coach are 20 percentile points pretty much in the key areas across the board, particularly in things like nurse communication and pain and listening and answering questions, compared to non-Studer Group partners. And I know that's something that you're looking into all the time. So it's exciting, and, you know, it's interesting because our techniques were never said, well, we're going to raise the score. It's always been about improving clinical outcomes and improving patient care. But I think when you do those things, of course, the results, no matter what tool you use, and we're seeing HCAHPS pretty much be it right now, seeing those and those improve. So you get to see that quality council data. What I want to talk about today, Lynn, is rounding. And for those of you that are listening, you might say, gee, I hear about rounding all the time. Well, that's because we find it's such a key technique, both in frequency of rounding and skill in rounding. And if it done consistently, it really can have some major impact. Now, one of the things that came out of rounding, and I probably think this is the area that I think organizations struggle in more than ever, is something called hourly rounding. And years ago, I remember when I first got into this rounding, I was looking at reduction of falls. And when I was president of a hospital, we actually put a clock on every unit on the door. And our goal was to get into a room every 2 hours. So if you saw that clock moving, what would happen is somebody would put the time they walked out, whether it's a environmental service worker, food service worker, a nurse, they'd put the last time somebody was in that room. And if anybody walked by and it was getting close to 2 o'clock, they had to go in and check some things. And even if they weren't a nurse, we'd check things like, do you have to go to the restroom? How's your pain? Are you comfortable? We checked to see if they had water, if their, you know, remote control for their TV was available, if they needed Kleenex. We just did everything we could, a basic survey of the room, and we trained everyone to do this. And we found that it made a huge impact in, of course, the patient's perception of care or what people might call patient satisfaction. Now, we weren't sophisticated enough to track things like falls or infections at the time. But then we did notice when we started going into really focusing on pressure ulcers that those units that we were better in doing this rounding every 2 hours had less pressure ulcers. So I got intrigued by it. The next thing that happened is I was in a coaching trip, and I asked a hospital who was their best nurse. And they all said, or I asked a unit, and they all sort of mentioned this lady, and they said, she's in a room right now, and I went and met her. She came out of the room, and I said, gee, your peers tell me you're just an exceptional nurse. And, of course, she said, oh, we're all the same, and, you know, she was uncomfortable with the compliments like healthcare people can be. But I started asking her why people thought she was such a good nurse, and she again tried to explain that she just didn't do anything different. And then finally she did say, well, I do always tell the patients when I'll be back. She said, I keep a track, and she actually showed me a piece of paper with each pet room, and she wrote when she was there last, and she would tell them she would be back. And she'd say, I always try to tell them I'll be back within an hour or within 90 minutes. And she said, I notice because I do that, my call lights don't go off as much, but it really allows me to provide, and I don't know exactly what you termed it, but I would call it proactive care. Well, that sort of intrigued me. And Lynn sort of came at the same route looking at rounding when she was getting her master's degree. And so we started looking in and say, what really frequency of rounding does make an impact? Because I found out I was wrong. 2 hours was good, but it's not good enough. And we implemented and we wrote a paper, or we had research do hourly rounding. So Lynn, why don't you tell a little bit about the hourly rounding, some of the research went into it, and some of the findings. And then for our audience, we'll probably take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to implement it, because it's probably one of the best things to implement for reducing falls and infections, but also probably the failure rate I find is extremely high if you don't implement it correctly. So, Lynn, why don't you tell the people your history a little bit of this rounding and hourly rounding and the study and so on?
Sure, be happy to. Well, as you mentioned, Clint, there was a lot of foundational work that had gone on. And so when I joined the student group 8 years ago, of course, helping organizations improve patient satisfaction is one of the important activities that we as coaches do. And it doesn't take you too long to figure out that if you want to move patient satisfaction, especially on the inpatient side, you're going to be spending a lot of time with nurse leaders on the nursing units. And as soon as you start that work, you're going to find out very quickly that one of the areas of patient satisfaction that is the hardest to move is this whole issue of response to call lights and requests. And across the nation, didn't matter what organization we were in, they were experiencing the same struggles. So even though we had some of these foundational activities in organizations, it just wasn't enough to really drive the results overall. So we started doing some observation, and in that observation we found a lot of very interesting behaviors that were taking place on the part of nurses. The first one was the fact that every time the nurse would go in the room, they would be using keywords, but the keywords they were using were, if you need me, call me. And so every time a nurse walked out of a room and said, if you need me, call me, well, patients are going to do what they're told to do, so sure enough, they'll call. And they're pushing their call light for every little request that came up. So we found out very early on that there was a lot of the behaviors that nurses were doing themselves that were actually contributing to the problem and not a better solution. So we started experimenting with what behaviors could we put in place that would reduce those call lights. And we found that a lot of the requests that patients were making were actually preventative. In other words, we could anticipate that need. And if we would address the need before the patient needed to use the call light, not only was the patient's satisfaction improved, but the nurse's efficiency was improved, and thus her satisfaction or his satisfaction along the way. So that was really the impetus behind the study. We wanted to look at what specific behaviors were going to be effective in the context of meeting the patient's needs more frequently, and then determine what was the right frequency. So during the context of the study, we also tested doing these rounds every hour versus every 2 hours in order to actually prove one way or the other what were the right behaviors and what was the right frequency. When we commissioned the study, it was a national study, and it was done in 64 organizations across the country, large academic medical centers, system organizations that were part of a system, small rural hospital, north, south, east, west, in order to be able to show an evidence-based practice at the end of the study that any organization could have put in place to improve the quality and satisfaction of the care.
I believe, Lynn, too, when people ask sometimes, I think it's real important if you look at the study, because I've looked at all other studies we've done on high-performing organizations, is, you know, we go up to New York, you go down to Miami, we go into Texas, we go into San Diego, we go into Washington, Hawaii, Alaska, that many times when we do our work, it really is geographic. Now, it doesn't mean that the results will all be the same, because even HCAPS is finding some geographic differences. But certainly the labor. I know one thing, you know, for example, I know in our study we had hospitals that had labor agreements and those that did not. But I think when it came down to patient care, there was some real consistency in the study. And tell us a little bit for our people that are very clinically oriented and or research oriented, how did they do that? I mean, did they keep logs? Did they keep tracks? Because I know when we did the study, we also made it very pure because it was going to be peer reviewed. And so some of them, even though show improvement, we didn't include them in the final research because maybe they didn't track it as well. Can you tell the listener audience just how, because we were very, very focused on making sure this was empirical data.
Exactly. We did. We had a PhD researcher who set up the template for the study and oversaw all of the data and the training for everybody who participated in the study. We wanted to be sure that this would stand up to peer review journals scrutiny. So we elected to have a 95% confidence interval in the overall review of the data. That meant if the organization submitted any of the information and there were any gaps in the data that didn't allow us to be sure that we were within that 95% confidence interval, we did not include their data in the study. That did knock out several facilities,
sure,
but certainly allowed us to keep a large number of them.
What? Tell me for the people again, for myself and the listener audience, so what type of data? I know they collect the data prior to the rounding, the hourly rounding, and we even had some do two-hour rounding to see if there was differences. What would a unit have to do to make sure that they were involved with, as far as tracking data?
When they were participating in the study, we collected baseline information on all of the data elements that we collected, which was inclusive of the number of call lights they had previously been answering, their patient satisfaction, raw scores, their fall rates, their pressure ulcer rates. We also asked for some demographic type information, as well as a little bit of information. For example, we asked for their labor statistics on work hours per patient day so that we could also compare staffing levels to some extent throughout the study. So we collected all that information before we even trained on the behavior so that there was no infusion accidentally of the behaviors being implemented during the study. Once we collected that information for a period of 2 weeks, we did the training of the staff with the behaviors, and then we collected post-execution data for 4 weeks. So it was a total of a six-week period of time that we collected data from these organizations. And you're right, Quint, we did have two different groups that were assigned, one who did the behaviors on an hourly basis, and then the others who did the behaviors Q2 hours so that we could compare those results.
And that was fascinating because I will tell you, as I traveled the country prior to our study and I would ask people what was the goal to make sure they were in a room, the goal was 2 hours. I never heard an hour. I always heard 2 hours, 2 hours. In fact, it was sort of cute. In one hospital I was at, Del Norte Community Hospital years ago, I was sitting in talking in a meeting, and all of a sudden the overhead speaker started playing the song by the Birds, Turn, Turn, Turn. And I asked them, I thought that was sort of, you know, why they did that. Was the switchboard get mixed up? And they said, oh, no, every 2 hours we play that song because that tells people to make sure they go into a room and reposition the patients. And I liked the creativity of it. I liked what they were doing. But what we found out with our study is that there was a big gap between somebody that goes in 2 hours and somebody that goes in an hour. In our last 2.5 minutes before we take our break, when we come back, we're going to get into the how-to. I just wanted to talk because I think our research is so important in this, because I find with staff, if they know the clinical outcomes of what they can do, if they adjust or change behavior or techniques, even if it's uncomfortable, they will still do the change or the adjustment because their values do not allow them not to do things that will improve clinical outcomes. What were some of the outcomes of the final study, Lynn?
Well, they were actually pretty amazing. When we looked at just the call light numbers, the raw numbers of call lights, we saw a 37.8% reduction on average in the number of call lights that were being answered by the staff just by being more proactive in our approach with patients. We also saw a 50% reduction in the fall rates of these patients. So by being in the room more often, assessing them better, the safety environment they're in, we saw a tremendous difference in preventing patients from falling, which, as you know, can be a very critical event to a patient and the family. But also in today's environment in healthcare now has quality and financial implications as well. We also saw a reduction in the numbers of hospital-acquired cubus ulcers to the rate of about 15% reduction. And lastly, another big outcome of the study was we saw a 12-point raw score increase in overall patient satisfaction.
Which is a difference between bottom 10% and almost top 10%.
Exactly. You'd turn that raw score increase into a percentile ranking, and it can move you into another quartile.
And I think as we wrapped up, too, I think we even had the nurses walked 1.4 miles less, which means they really could spend more time proactively planning care instead of reactively. I remember you taught me one time, Lynn, when you were doing research, that the call light was really meant as an emergency response system, which over the years had become more of a wait till we get buzzed. And we'll talk about that when we come back. My guest today is nurse extraordinaire and leader extraordinaire, Lynn Kettleson. When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit more about the how-to put in hourly rounding, because I know everyone out there truly wants to do what's right for the patients with clinical outcomes, and we're going to talk about the huge financial impact it has. So now, we'll be with you just in a few minutes, and we're looking forward to having you back with our guest, Lynn Kettleson.
This is my song, but it's not about me. crashing in.